Welcome back, everyone. You guys sent in some really interesting stuff this time. Excerpts from a lecture on biblical archaeology by Dr. Jeffrey Houdin.
Sounds intriguing.
Yeah. So it looks like we're diving deep into archaeology, seeing what kind of evidence is out there that packs up those biblical stories about King David, you know, his life, his reign.
Oh, this will be fun.
Yeah. And we'll be tackling a little controversy along the way, too. So that always makes things interesting, right?
Always.
Did you know there's actually a site some people think was King David's family estate?
Oh, wait, really?
Yeah. And what about those mysterious tunnels under Jerusalem?
Oh, I've heard about those.
Yeah, we'll be uncovering all those secrets and a lot more.
I can't wait. This is a really dynamic period in biblical archaeology, you know, full of all these exciting new discoveries, but also tons of debate and just a lot of complexity.
So to kick things off, can you kind of set the stage for us? Where does David's story fit in the broader historical context?
Yeah, so, you know, you have to remember that before David became king over all of Israel, he ruled Judah, you know, for 7 years.
Right.
Then he conquered Jerusalem, which was a Canaanite city, also known as Jebus, and made it his capital.
Okay, so why Jerusalem? Doesn't sound like the most obvious choice.
It was a brilliant move, strategically speaking.
Really?
Oh, yeah. See, Jerusalem was a neutral city, you know, not aligned with any particular tribe.
Oh, okay.
Which made it perfect for uniting those different Israelite tribes under David's rule.
So it was all about keeping the peace.
Exactly. Yeah. Choosing Jerusalem, you know, it helped David avoid all that, stirring up any intertribal conflicts, and it kind of paved the way for a unified kingdom.
So smart politics, in addition to, you know, being this great warrior king, huh?
Right.
But for a long time, people questioned whether King David even existed at all.
Yeah.
It was like, was he a real person or just a legendary figure like, you know, like King Arthur?
You're right. There was a lot of skepticism about David's historicity. But then, you know, in 1993, there was this groundbreaking discovery, the Tel Dan Stele.
The what?
The Tel Dan Stele. It's this inscription, you know, written in Aramaic, like about a century after David's time.
Okay.
And it clearly mentions the house of David.
Hold on. Aramaic. What's that exactly?
Oh, Aramaic was like the common language for diplomacy and trade back then in that whole region.
Oh, okay.
You know, kind of like the English of the ancient Near East.
Got it.
So the fact that this inscription made by a neighboring kingdom no less mentions the house of David. That's huge.
Yeah, that does make a difference.
Oh, it's a game changer. This wasn't even written by, you know, the Israelites themselves, which makes it even more compelling as an independent source.
Hmm, that makes sense.
Yeah, this discovery really shifted the whole debate about whether or not David was a real historical figure.
Oh, wow.
And get this, the archaeologist's assistant who actually found this deal, he was someone who was super skeptical about, you know, the historical accuracy of the Bible.
Oh, wow. Talk about irony.
Right. It's like the evidence was hiding in plain sight, just waiting for the right person to come along.
It's amazing how these things happen sometimes.
It really is. So, yeah, that one inscription really helped solidify David as, you know, a historical figure.
Wow. One inscription.
And, you know, there are others, too. There's the Meshastidel, also from around the same time period.
Okay.
Which some scholars think might also mention the house of David. And then there's even a possible reference to the Highland of David in an inscription all the way over in Egypt at Karnak.
So it's like every new discovery just adds another piece to this puzzle, you know, like the mosaic of David's life and reign.
Exactly. And these discoveries, they've pushed archaeologists to look for, you know, even more evidence related to David and his kingdom.
So what other clues have they uncovered about David's life? You know, the places he lived, the battles he fought, that sort of thing.
Well, for one thing, archaeologists have they've identified and explored many of the key locations from David's early life, like Bethlehem, you know, his birthplace.
Of course, Bethlehem.
Right.
What about Gila, though? I remember reading something about a possible connection to David's family there.
Oh, yeah, Gila. That's a fascinating site. It overlooks the Rephaim Valley just outside of Jerusalem. It's not super well preserved, but archaeologists have found evidence of Iron Age watchtowers there.
Okay, so what do those watchtowers tell us?
Well, you know, think of them as carefully constructed defensive positions.
Like lookout points.
Yeah, exactly. They suggest that Gilo was a strategically important outpost, maybe even used by David himself.
Wow.
And here's where it gets really interesting. Gilo had no natural water sources.
So why would they build a settlement there?
Exactly. It's a great question, right?
Yeah.
It suggests that Jerusalem, with its, you know, its reliable water supply from the Gihon Spring, was already a pretty significant settlement back then.
Makes you think about the choices they had to make back then.
Absolutely. I mean, their decisions were driven by, you know, those same basic needs for security and resources that that drive us today.
Yeah, that's true.
And speaking of Jerusalem, you know, that's where David really made history.
David's conquest of Jerusalem, that's a big deal. But I was surprised to learn it wasn't this, like, grand city back then. What did Jerusalem look like in David's time?
Oh, it was more like a fortress than, you know, than a bustling metropolis.
Right.
But its strategic location, right on the border between between the tribes of Judah and Benjamin, is what made it so appealing.
Okay, so I get the neutral capital thing.
Right.
But wasn't it kind of risky choosing such a relatively small city? I mean, couldn't that have backfired?
Oh, there were definitely risks involved. But, you know, David's choice, it really proved to be a wise one.
Okay.
Remember, Jerusalem had that all-important water source, the Gihon Spring, which was essential for any growing city.
Right. Water was life back then.
Exactly. Just like it is today.
What else have they found in Jerusalem that dates back to David's time?
Well, archaeologists have uncovered what might be the remains of David's palace, right in the area of the Gihon Spring.
Really?
Yeah, and they even found this thing called the stepstone structure, which is thought to have, you know, protected the spring. Think of it like an ancient water filtration system.
Wow, so they're really uncovering the foundations of David's Jerusalem.
They really are. It's amazing to think about.
It really is.
And it's not just Jerusalem, you know, that's yielding clues to David's reign.
Oh.
There's another site, Kirbet Kaiapha, that offers even more intriguing insights.
Kirbet what?
Kirbet Kaiapha. It's located overlooking the Elah Valley, the same valley where David fought Goliath, you know.
Oh, wow. I've never heard of Kirbet Kaiapha. What's so special about it?
Well, Kirbet Kaiapha has these impressive remnants of massive walls, gates, and even what some scholars think is an early prototype of the temple.
Wait, hold on. A prototype of the temple?
Yeah.
That's a huge deal.
It is. The scale and complexity of the structures at Kirbet Kaiapha suggest that the early Israelite kingdom, you know, under either David or possibly even Saul, was far more sophisticated and powerful than we previously thought.
So this site's like challenging the assumptions we had about the early monarchy, huh?
Exactly. Like, hey, these guys weren't just, you know, wandering nomads. They're building some pretty impressive stuff.
Yeah. That changes things.
It really does. Kirbet Kaiapha, it paints a picture of, you know, of a well-organized and powerful early Israelite kingdom.
Wow.
It's really a game changer in how we understand that whole period.
This is all so fascinating. I'm already getting a much clearer picture of King David and his world.
And we've only just begun. Remember those two tunnels excavated in the city of David that we talked about earlier? Those might hold the answer to, you know, one of the biggest mysteries surrounding David's reign.
Mysterious tunnels, huh? You really got me hooked. Tell me more about these tunnels. What makes them such a big mystery?
Well, you see, these tunnels, they were excavated over a century ago. And they've really stirred up a lot of debate among archaeologists.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Some believe that that they might actually be the remnants of royal tombs.
Tombs.
Yeah. Maybe even the tombs of David and his successors.
Well, hold on, wait. So we're talking about like the actual burial places of the kings.
Exactly.
But didn't Dr. Hewden say something about David's tomb being on Mount Zion?
Yeah, that's where things get a little tricky.
Okay.
You see, the name Mount Zion, it's actually shifted over time.
Oh, interesting.
So the Mount Zion, you know, that we know today, it isn't the same location as the biblical Mount Zion.
Okay.
The tunnels we're talking about, they're situated in the city of David. Which lines up perfectly with the biblical accounts.
Got it. So the location makes sense.
Right.
But what makes archaeologists think these tunnels are actually tombs? I mean, they just sound like, well, tunnels.
You know, it's true. They have been heavily quarried over the centuries. So sadly, much of the original structure is gone.
Oh, too bad.
Yeah. But we still have clues.
Okay.
For one, the Book of Nehemiah, it describes an inspection of Jerusalem's walls, and it specifically mentions the tombs of the kings in this exact area.
So we have a biblical reference to tombs in the right location.
Exactly.
That's pretty convincing. What else?
Also, you know, archaeologists have discovered similar tunnel-like structures in other confirmed royal burial sites, places like Hazor.
Oh, okay.
They may not be as ornate as, you know, as you might expect, but but they fit the pattern.
So we could be talking about a site where some of the most powerful figures in, you know, biblical history are buried.
It's pretty amazing, isn't it?
It is mind-blowing. What about that tomb that tourists visit on Mount Zion? What's the story there?
Ah, that particular structure, it's actually much later, most likely, from the Byzantine period.
Oh.
So definitely not David's tomb.
Yeah.
And probably not even a burial place for the later kings of Judah.
So more of a symbolic site than a historically accurate one.
You got it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great example of how, you know, how history can become intertwined with tradition and belief over time.
You know, it's funny. We often imagine these biblical kings as, you know, as these larger than life figures.
Right.
But they were probably worried about the same things we are today, right? Water, security, and maybe even leaving a legacy behind.
I think that's a really insightful point.
Yeah.
And speaking of legacies, David's influence, it actually extended far beyond, you know, the walls of Jerusalem.
It did.
Oh, yeah. Remember the lecture mentioned something about copper mining?
Yeah.
That's where we really start to see the true economic might of his kingdom.
Okay.
We're talking about, you know, the Edomite lowlands, the Timna Valley
yeah.
areas that were rich in copper and showed signs of large-scale mining, likely controlled by the Israelites during David and Solomon's reigns.
So this wasn't just like a couple of guys digging holes in the ground.
No, yeah.
We're talking about like, you know, industrial scale mining operations.
Exactly. Big time stuff. And the proof is, the proof's in the pudding, as they say.
Oh, yeah.
Archaeologists have uncovered this incredibly sophisticated fortress and mining system at a site called Kerbet and Nahas.
That's a mouthful.
I know, right? But the scale and complexity of this operation, it really points to a powerful kingdom behind it all, and all signs point to the Israelites.
Mm.
So, and this control over copper production, you know, it have translated into like immense wealth and power
yeah.
for David and Solomon.
Oh, absolutely. Control over copper that gave them a massive, you know, economic and military advantage.
Right.
I mean, this was the Bronze Age, right? And copper was like essential for making weapons and tools and everything.
Exactly.
It's like the oil industry of the ancient world, you know?
Perfect analogy.
Whoever controlled the copper, they controlled a lot more than just mines.
Right. They controlled an entire economy.
Exactly. And a military. It really adds another layer to our understanding of David's kingdom. You know,
mm-hmm.
we're not just talking about, battles and conquests, but also like the development of economic power and a flourishing nation.
So it's a story of resources, infrastructure, and building a strong, prosperous nation.
Exactly.
It's a much more nuanced picture of this whole period in biblical history than I ever had before.
And it's all thanks to the tireless work of archaeologists who are uncovering these incredible details and challenging our assumptions about the past.
It's like having a window into a world we thought was lost to time.
And we're only just scratching the surface. There's still so many secrets hidden beneath the sands just waiting to be discovered. It really makes me wonder what other biblical stories are out there just waiting to be, you know, unearthed. What other figures or events could be brought to life through archaeology? You know, it really is incredible to think about how much we learn from archaeology. You know, we started this whole deep dive wondering if King David was even real.
Oh, no, right.
And now we're talking about, like, the sophisticated infrastructure and economic power of his kingdom.
It's really amazing what lies beneath the surface just waiting to be discovered.
It makes you wonder what other biblical stories are out there, you know, just waiting to be unearthed.
Yeah.
What other figures or events could archaeology bring to life?
Well, that's what makes this whole field so exciting, right? It's this ongoing process of discovery and reevaluation.
Yeah.
Every new find has the potential to, like, challenge those assumptions that we have and show us how, you know, how complex and fascinating history really is.
It's like a never-ending detective story, isn't it? With archaeologists as the detectives carefully piecing together, you know, all those clues from the past.
That's a great analogy.
So what does all this mean for, you know, for us, the non-archaeologists?
Yes.
Why should we care about King David and his world?
That's a really important question. You know, I think it goes beyond just the historical details, you know, by learning about David's life
mm-hmm.
and his reign, I think we gain a better understanding of the roots of our own cultural and religious traditions.
Yeah. Yeah. I see that.
It's a way of, you know, connecting with a past that, continues to shape us even today.
Yeah, it reminds us that history isn't just, you know, dates and names in some textbook. It's
right.
It's about real people, their struggles, you know, their triumphs and the legacy they left behind.
Yeah.
Sometimes those legacies are literally buried underground, just waiting for us to uncover them.
That's a beautiful way to put it.
It's a legacy that continues to inspire us and intrigue us centuries later.
It really does. And who knows what other discoveries await us in the future, right?
Exactly.
The sands of time, they hold countless secrets just waiting to be revealed.
Well, on that note, that's all the time we have for today's deep dive. Big thanks to all of you out there for sending in such fascinating material. And of course, a huge thanks to you for sharing your expertise with us.
My pleasure. Always happy to talk about this stuff.
So until next time, keep exploring, keep questioning, and keep those deep dive suggestions coming.